It's a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Operation Kino episode 103, the review segment in which we are reviewing Park Chan-wook's new film, first American film, Stoker. To talk about it with us, we have brought in Amy Nicholson. Amy, tell the people where they can find you on the internet.
Hey guys, right now I am writing for Screen Rant for Movies.com and for Badass Digest and Hello.
And thank you for joining us. We brought you in, I admit, but, to cause some conflict because we have differing opinions on Stoker.
And, have I been set up?
Basically, we're here to beat you up in an alley and then leave you for dead. But before we get into that, Stoker is a movie from Park Chan-wook. It's the first movie he has made in English. He is director of Old Boy and Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. And David can probably name 10 more titles of movies.
I cannot because he has not directed 10 more films, but I could make a few up.
Burn,
Katie.
I know. It is based on a script by Wentworth Miller, the guy from Prison Break, which never fails to amuse me. And it stars Mia Wasikowska as this girl named India Stoker, who lives in this giant mansion with her mom, who's played by Nicole Kidman, and her father dies. And immediately after the father dies, the uncle shows up, played by Matthew Good, and seems to be up to no good. A couple people who were critiquing the movie said they knew from the minute that the uncle was up to no good, and I reminded them that it's just the plot of Hamlet. That is how it works. But I don't want to get too much more into what happens from there because I think it's fun to discover for yourself. Before we get into dissent about it, David and Patches, do you guys want to share your thoughts?
Go, David. Go.
Me? Geez. Where to begin? Well, first
You've
of all,
seen him recently than me.
All uncles are implicitly evil. I think just by virtue of a sibling of yours having a child, you become a lesser human being. History of dramatic narratives.
Thank God I'm an only child. I can stay good forever.
No, I'm gonna be an uncle for the first time in about 2 months, and I'm
humble brag
making a slow transition to just being an outright asshole from just being like a mild
what
asshole.
Are you now?
Anyway, yeah, exactly. I don't have far to go.
Oh dear,
it's not, a jarring transition for me. But anyway, this is despite the and I was concerned as a Park Chan-wook acolyte that. Teaming with the guy from Prison Break, which does not seem to be the most illustrious collaboration, would be a really dicey English language debut. But this is through and through a Park Chan-wook film to the bone. I mean, it is as sort of woozily beautiful and hyper-languid and just very – I mean, he's working with this regular cinematographer, so it looks and feels like a Park Chan-wook film. But for me – and we could open this up to conversation, but – all in all, this was just a really rich gothic nature versus nurture war to the death. I mean, it's a coming of age story that in which the forces that are sort of tugging Mia Wasikowska's main character, whose first name is India. I was going to say I forget, but easy to remember, is being pulled between these sort of her better nature and the movie begins with a voiceover monologue sort of about how being an adult means. And coming from family means having certain burdens of your personality and morality decided for you. And the movie really wrestles with that. And over the course of the very contained, I think, in an idiosyncratically Park Chan-wook way, it all takes place on this sort of gothic house in South Carolina.
It's in Connecticut.
It's in Connecticut?
Who knows where it is? I think that's part of the magic.
It's definitely in Connecticut.
What the fuck?
Let's just say it's in uptight white people land because that's
perfect. Yes,
it's full of white people.
The gated community.
I am almost certain it's not Connecticut, but it's really her uncle who's evil and her mother who's questionable and fighting against her sort of carnal maturation. And it's a movie where a character, namely India Stoker, literally comes of age. Which is something that I'm not sure if I'd ever seen before. And you'll know what
I'm saying. Pun you've ever made on this show.
But it's also one of the more accurate because there's a scene in which she literally she's masturbating and she comes and her hair grows substantially as she is making this sort of moral breakthrough in regards to how she is going to interact with the world and is assuming the sort of agency that the film is really all about endowing her with.
Wait,
and,
that's not what happens on everybody's first time?
You're gonna have to tell me more about that because I don't know anything. That is whoa.
All right, subject change.
Amy, let's go ahead and throw it to you just to since David talked a lot and we may as well get into what. I mean, you're not a fan of the movie, and I'm curious why.
I'm not. I mean, I can agree with David that it looks beautiful. I think it's a gorgeously shot film, but I don't really see any of the richness in it that he does. I mean, it's contained, but I find it more claustrophobic in a way.
Hmm.
I have a real issue with these sort of like stilted films about kind of like a stiff, almost icy young girl who comes of age, but really just sort of like wanders around passively and like does what people tell her to do, or sometimes just doesn't do what people tell her to do. And like the lack of her doing anything is like her action.
She has a real Wednesday Addams quality about her, especially in their early going when they have the oversized prop chairs and whatnot.
Oh yeah.
She does. But like Wednesday Addams, I think, is like fun and sort of wicked, where all I really got from India was just a blandness. You know, I feel like she's like a person who her character definition is that she sort of absorbs the world and like takes it in. But I don't really see her like reflect anything of interest until like,
but even when, like in the first scene of the film, when she's doing this birthday hunt, that her attachment to her father is when she's lit up the most, and she seems to be kind of opening up in these first moments of the film when she's running around the yard and finding the keys and finding clues, and she seems like a very vivid human being.
She's an unformed character, but I think that for the most part, when you see stories that are sort of these coming of age stories, the characters start from this sort of malleable place where they're being pulled in different directions and sort of have to decide for themselves how they're going to grow.
I can see the value in that, but I don't find it cinematically interesting. You know, and I agree with you, Matt, that like in those early scenes, it's cool. Like in the first 5 minutes, I was actually on board with this film, but it just very soon it reminded me of another film, and I'm probably going to make enemies when I say this, but another film I didn't like, which was Pan's Labyrinth.
Hmm.
Oh, that's hard for you to admit. I understand.
I know. I got beaten up about it a lot that year.
But I can see the parallels. I think that's probably
I can definitely see the parallels too. Although there's not, I mean, I don't want to make people think there's large political ramifications to Stoker. I don't think there's any of that in there.
Nor are there overwhelmingly supernatural elements at play. I mean, I had assumed for years because of the Bram Stoker connection, and I willfully knew nothing about this movie, that it was about vampires. And about 70 minutes into the movie, I'm like, where are the vampires?
I thought that the whole time too, that because it's so heightened, you kind of expect some sort of supernatural twist or something otherworldly to be going on because the style is so otherworldly and there's a detachment there that there feels like there needs to be a twist at some point. But the movie doesn't really pander like that.
She has heightened perception. I mean, she has heightened sensation. She can hear. She has supernatural hearing. But it's really like an autistic thing. It's like more than she's Spider-Man.
Right.
Yeah.
Although she's Spider-Man, I might have liked it more. Because, I mean, at least she'd be, like, doing something, you know?
Well, about her passivity, I think you're right that she spends a lot of the time kind of, like, sitting at the kitchen table with her mom and glowering and not really doing anything like Wednesday Addams. But I think what's interesting about the time you spend in this house is that she has a lot of power in doing that. Like, there's a lot of people who want to get inside her head and want to talk to her and want to figure out her deal. Like, I mean, you see the boys at school, like, who are making fun of her because she won't give them an inch. I like that her stillness and her stoicism is the power that she has. And then she kind of, as the film goes on, she learns much more active kinds of power until at the end, she's a very active character. She's got a lot going on in the end of the movie.
But I think, Amy, I'd be curious what your thoughts are about other Park Chan-wook movies. Because for me, even though this is written by somebody else, it feels like a prototypical Park Chan-wook heroine in that she's really driven more by these sort of deep-seated psychic desires than she is typical wants of characters that we're accustomed to in sort of Western films.
I mean, I can get behind that in that, you know, in some ways she's probably as screwed up in the head as the young girl in Old Boy. But at least I thought also that, like, the young girl in Old Boy, who also had, like, subliminal pulls that were sort of vaguely incestual, or I guess literally incestual, I felt like that character had, like, spark and, like, life and, like, an energy to her that I just don't get. And, I mean, I'm wondering, I'm going to ask you guys this, like, I see a lot of directors who I feel like misuse Mia Wasikowska and turn her into like the sort of like ice queen.
Well, that's what happened in Burton's Alice in Wonderland.
Exactly.
And yeah, ever since her breakout role in Treatment, where she kind of played an introverted, you know, she's a pained person, she's in therapy. Everyone seems to think that she must play these low status characters who can never speak. for some reason.
Exactly. And what I find so interesting about it is I saw Stoker with somebody who was like, I hate Mia Wasikowska. And as we were leaving, I was like, do you hate her or do you hate the way she gets directed? And that's what I'm curious to hear from you guys. Although you like this film, so
but,
I guess it's...
But here, for me, like, comparing it to something like Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, which I can almost feel connections to. We were talking about Adam's Family, that kind of like weird gothic heightened, maybe near cartoonish at times, and that's kind of why I like Stoker, that it's playing with these, they're not the most detailed deep characters, but they're certainly the broad strokes are strongly painted, and they the archetypes are there so that we can it kind of reminds me of Anna Karenina too, where we're playing with like dance and theatrical.
Anna Karenina 2?
Yeah, Anna Karenina 2 Stoker.
I can't wait.
It's about the train.
Back from the grave. Wait.
Well, just to play something that's so dramatic, that's so operatic at times, that you almost need bold characters who we are familiar with, who we can identify with, without having to kind of go into backstory or go into a lot of detail, and we can play with them in these kind of really dynamic, really crazy scenes and clash them together and that sort of thing. And that's why I guess if the characters come off as a little thin, I kind of accept that so that they can be played with in really big, vivid ways.
And the environments are also unusually expressive of India's character in a way that compensates or allows for the sort of placid surface. And I think that's part of what appeals to me about Mia Wasikowska, and maybe also explains why she's been used the way that she has, which is that, you know, to make this a really base thing, I always am wondering whether or not I find her attractive. And I think that also speaks to, like, there's this quality about her that's very, it's like unformed clay. It's like she's a perfect fit for like a Kuleshov experiment. It's like, you know, you're going to feel about her however the filmmaker makes you feel about her. And I think that is really exciting for a filmmaker, where they can sort of have her as this blank slate and have all of the themes of the film and the action of the film projected onto her rather than...
I feel the same way about her in Lawless.
Oh, wait, sorry. Amy, say that again?
Oh, I was just going to say, but I think what's weird about that is most of them, like, take her as a blank slate and then just leave her that way, which I feel like she is for kind of two-thirds of this film until she gets interesting.
I feel like the surrounding area impacts her enough. Like you were talking about, David, the environment, it's almost like Park Chan-wook, he knew he could throw anything at her around her because of the way you described her as this moldable clay. And like I was saying, I felt the same way about Lawless, which also had a really dynamic background and a very expansive world to play with, and Mia Wasikowska could kind of fit in that however John Hillcoat wanted to play with it. And here it's the same kind of thing. You kind of see her drift between these scenes, and then what I also love about this movie is that we get to see her leave this area. You know, we talked about how, Amy, you said that the world is a little claustrophobic to you, but I'm glad that we get to see for a second. Like, I didn't know what time this movie took place in, what year, or who knew when and where we really were. And then she steps out and goes to school one day, and it's like that clash is insane, just as insane as any of the crazy visuals of the gothic mansion. Like, I just love that sequence.
Amy, did you have – I mean, I guess if it didn't work for you, you must not have – enjoyed the way it was shot, not merely its look, but I mean, there's a hyper staginess to the way Park Chan-wook shoots, and I thought that his use of space in the frame was really exciting in this film. In particular, one shot that I thought typified it best, involving when the camera dollies back from the dinner table and points your eye towards this this empty space in the hallway, and then in the distance, distant background of the frame, Mia Wasikowska appears between these two curtains and the last place you'd expect her to look. And I just thought that there was like a real vitality to the way that he created his compositions in this movie, and that really sort of underscored what he was doing with the character. And I was wondering if all of that just sort of felt exasperating to you, if you weren't on board with what was happening.
Actually, no. Like, yeah, I really technically thought this was a great film. I mean, even down to the sound design, which I really loved. You were talking about, like, her hyper sound. I mean, you really hear that in there. And I love sort of theatricality, and I think, like, we're sort of part of the Anna Karenina power trio who just like worship that film. Wait, Matt, do you love it too?
I do indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So we're like a power quartet. You know, I love that. But I think I just, when it comes to stock characters, the one stock character that I just noticed I consistently hate is the passive girl.
But what about in the scene where she plays the piano with Matthew Good's character?
Such a good scene.
And that kind of duel. Scene. I mean, I think the music cue is actually called Duel.
It was written by Philip Glass.
Yeah, which is, I just think that sequence is incredible. And I get so much from her through that. You know, the music is emotional and swaying enough. But then Mia Wasikowska brings so much to that scene.
Mia Wasikowska?
How do you say her name? Mia Wasikowska?
There's an A at the end. Yeah.
Mia Wasikowska!
It doesn't, you know, I don't know why I even
listen,
bothered.
Listen, you say Wasikowska, I say Wasikowska.
It really doesn't
Let's
bother
call
me
the
in
whole
the slightest.
Thing off.
I just felt like wasting all of our time.
Thank you. But yeah, I got a lot from her there. And same with Matthew Good, who's kind of just this haunting figure roaming this house, stirring up trouble. But there, seeing the two kind of face off in a musical way, an emotional way, I don't know. I got a lot from her.
I never thought Matthew Good was anything at all, and I really liked him in this. I was really excited to see him in a role that seemed to matter.
Mm. I liked seeing him as sort of like this Tom Cruise-ian figure, you know, when he like picks her up from school and he's leaning against his
sports
and he's
sunglasses.
Got the shades on.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, can we agree that like that piano scene, while it is great, wouldn't it be great if that had happened, say, like an hour earlier in the film, and then we got to really see her become an active character? Like, I want to know what happens at the end of, like, I guess we can't get too spoiler, but where the film ends, if we had a half hour after that, and they'd maybe taken a half hour out of the middle, then I would be more on board with this film.
But
it's
like,
just like, yeah. It's a film about a girl finding her agency and sort of, and wresting it from her influences. And so I think, you know, it's inevitable that she is going to be somewhat passive when we meet her. I thought it was to the film's credit and to Wentworth Miller's credit, assuming that his script remained somewhat intact, that she was still interesting to me and a fully formed figure despite her defining element being her lack of agency early
but
in the film.
I might argue that her lack of agency starts to not even make sense. Do you know what I mean? Because there's moments in this film where she should have done something.
Why doesn't she erupt earlier? Or why doesn't she lash out at her mother who is just torturing her in some way?
Exactly. Or even there's a point where she, say, finds a dead body. Mm. And she doesn't do anything about that. You know what I mean? Like, in one way or another, nothing happens because
of
that. Well,
family, maybe I give it a little slack because I think it, her choices fit in sort of the heightened environment that Park Jin-won.
Right. Is that Adam's
creates?
Family logic in some way?
Yeah, but I also think that like families have their own logic, and I think that the way that the film is visually constructed speaks to that, that it's unlike something you're familiar with. You understand that this family operates in a way that's likely to be different than your own, I would hope. And it, for me, who have my family has its own quirks, and especially regarding uncles. And I was like, okay, you know, like this family is going to be operating on their own terms. And it would be almost presumptuous, as long as I'm buying the rest of the narrative, to assume that she should behave in the way that I would expect her to be.
I think that's the key there. If you're sold on the fantasy of this story, then the decisions that she makes end up making sense. It's kind of storybook logic in some ways.
It's true, but I couldn't, and for a couple of reasons. I mean, if we're talking about her family dynamic, you have her mother played by Nicole Kidman, who would not fit into that dynamic at all. You know, she's sort of this like very outwardly blousy, normally hot-blooded type of woman, and then everything we ever sort of glean from her father is that he was a great father too. So there's not like a creepiness surrounding her until the uncle shows up. You know, so when you look at the pieces of it, I still don't buy.
You don't
her
think
character.
It's like Cinderella-y? I guess in that case, Cinderella's case, it's stepmother, daughter. But it seems to me that it's kind of all in the works already, and that she's just biding her time until the uncle gets there, or that sort of thing.
I don't know. Something about it just didn't feel thought out to me. I mean, well, one scene I'd love to kind of ask you guys about to see if it bothered you as much as I did is there's a scene where you see what her uncle was like before he showed up at the house. Mm. Like
as a kid.
Like,
as a kid?
Or not even as a kid, but like a couple hours before he showed up at the house.
Okay.
And he seems like a completely different person than the one who arrives at the house, say, like a day later. How vague can I be? Or how
No, I mean, I certainly know what you're talking about.
I know
about.
The scene you're talking about, but...
He, like, yeah. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
He just seems like crazy and loud and strange and obviously different than the cool, composed character who really shows up that week. And I just don't see how those two things reconcile. It felt like nobody was behind the wheel of that scene.
Well, I mean, I think he... I mean, I there's obviously a soapy quality to that that you either sort of buy or you don't. And I think that if it were presented in a straight drama, if this were like Rachel getting married and this uncle character materialized, I don't know why that was the first film I thought of, but I probably would have had an eyebrow raised. But at that point, to me, particularly because I was grooving with it as a Park Chan-wook film, where this sort of darker histories and the ability to obfuscate them under, like, you know, very transparent surfaces is sort of par for the course, and it speaks to how all these characters relating to each other in a performative way, and they're all sort of putting on this show for one another. You see that with the aunt character, who's played by Jackie Weaver.
Jackie Weaver was in this movie?
And, better in this movie than she is in Silver Linings Playbook.
She has a lot more to do, but also they are... I mean, there's a scene where she comes over for dinner and everyone is performing for everyone else. There's only like three or four of them in the room, and they all know what the score is. Although we're sort of with Mia Wasikowska in that we are the most clueless, I would say. But at the same, like, they're all sort of putting on a show for each other. There was a performative element to how the family behaved and the faces they showed one another that I sort of rolled with.
I love that scene because I think you're totally right about the performative elements and the way that the camera is placed. There's this tension in almost every single frame and most of these scenes where you have no idea what's going to happen. Like, you're just kind of waiting for someone to pull out a machete and murder someone in the corner. Like, there's this amazing tension in the entire movie. And I think that, like, Amy, when you talk about these character things, I don't have a good answer for it because this stuff never occurred to me because my enjoyment – and usually I focus on character stuff. I just felt like it was – and this is maybe a time when style over substance actually succeeds for me.
Well, I don't know if it's style over substance. In some ways, I think that people, you know, Katie, when we saw this movie at Sundance, there were a lot of people who were uncomfortable and weren't really sure what to make of Stoker. And all I could say was that I was laughing the whole time, that I think it's a very funny movie, that it's a playful movie, even when things are getting violent or even when things are getting really dramatic and heavy. But I'm laughing. I'm just having a great time. And I think that's part of the film's intention to kind of be extravagant and be big and be silly at times. And coupling that with the high drama. And maybe that speaks to what you're saying. That not necessarily that style has to be more than substance, but that the substance doesn't have to be character driven. If that makes sense.
I feel like there's only one person in the film who sort of nails, like, making a character with style and substance, and I think that's Nicole Kidman. Like, I think she's fantastic in this film.
I just remembered that, and I think this is important for everyone to know, that you love The Paperboy.
Are you going to rat me out right now?
You need to own it, I think.
Paperboy. But Nicole Kidman in The Paperboy. I think Nicole Kidman should have won the Golden Globe for The Paperboy.
See, now
nomination. And
now we're getting into the good stuff. Now we know where this is really coming from.
But she's fantastic. I mean, it's interesting because I was thinking as I was watching it that directors used to treat Nicole Kidman the way that they treat Mia Wasikowska now. You know, they look at her as this sort of, like, intelligent ice queen who's also Australian, and they kind of make her this frozen figure. And, I mean, she's only now thawing and becoming an interesting actress again for the first time since, like, To Die For. And I love that there's sort of this weird irony that they're getting paired together, and Nicole Kidman's finally, like, alive with a pulse, and Mia Wasikowska's getting drained to death once again.
Hmm. Not by vampires.
Not by vampires. If it had been vampires or Katie's machete, God, I would have liked this movie.
I think it's getting close to time to wrap up. But Amy, what's interesting is there's been a lot of stuff that you've found interesting about this. Like, I mean, obviously this is a movie worth discussion. Do you recommend it to people who are fans of Park Chan-wook or who, you know, are kind of intrigued by how weird this movie looks, even though you were disappointed by it?
I do, because I feel like, especially if you're an Oldboy fan, like, you can see traces of who he is in the film, but I don't feel like he's really himself, but I feel like he's trying. Like, I think it's, like, interesting to sort of break it apart and look for the Park Chan-wook beneath all the, you know, placid shots of Mia Wasikowska's saddle shoes.
And that made me really want a pair of saddle shoes.
You would look great in saddle shoes.
I should go get some.
You would be great in, like, blood-covered... Your face is just drenched in the blood of a man that you love. What do you think about that? And those shoes.
Thanks. That's creepy. David, do you want any final words on Stoker?
I'm not sure if my enthusiasm for this movie was properly conveyed. I think that I had such an amazing time watching this. I do think there is a wealth of great, rich texture going on in this movie. I'm not going to say something ridiculous because it is not even March yet. But I really love this movie. I am afraid that it's not going to do very well, but I would really encourage everyone out there to go see it.
Oh, I don't think it's going to do well. Who's ready to get this, pick up and see this movie? I don't know. But
we are.
I agree with David that the film is fantastic, and I do find it difficult to describe and explain because I feel like I'm lessening the impact somehow of trying to elaborate on the imagery that Park Chan-wook throws at us here and how he kind of weaves it all together with this with amazing performances. I really do think everyone in the movie is very good and echoes the imagery that he uses, or he echoes them as they kind of swim through this sea that he's splashing and it's a big storm. I don't know. I'm trying to get poetic here, you know. I don't know how to. There's a scene where someone's hair becomes wheat, and I just think that is the one of the most marvelous things that I'll see all year. And also the score by Clint Mansell, I think, is wondrous as well. And I just, the whole package for me just really kind of blew my mind.
I do think there's a certain niche of depressed gothic teenagers who shop at Hot Topic, and this will be their favorite movie of the year.
Oh, yeah. Like Alice in Wonderland was 2 years ago. And Mio Asakasa has their number.
I want to get that key on a pair of Converse sneakers or something.
I technically got that key in the mail, and David still has it because there are some publicists who think I live with him.
I also got a collection of pencils that were very sharp.
As did I. I could have stabbed someone with them if I wanted
to. I hope you
to.
Enjoy them. Those are rightfully
I'm
mine.
I'm really glad that I'm not in the same room with you guys.
This Stoker review could have gotten violent, but that'll have to be for next time we run.
It will. Yes, in honor of the last weekend of February, what is your favorite February movie release from any year ever?
Special guest Amy Nicholson, you get to go first.
Well, I'm going to jump back to 1999 with a little movie called Office Space.
Oh my gosh. Ooh. That really nobody saw then. That beautiful February.
I saw it in theaters with my dad, who I remember laughing hysterically at the scene where they were like, nah, not going to be working here anymore. That really
Wait,
got me.
How old were you in 1999?
I was 15.
Oh, your dad is cool.
That is a fantastic
Yeah, what made your dad take you to Office
I don't know. It turns out that my dad likes to go to the... There's not a lot to do in Connecticut. He likes going to the movies. I don't know. He likes comedies. Analyze This almost killed him.
From laughter, not...
From laughter.
I also like Analyze This, which I don't think is a very movie. I'm going to go ahead because there's a late-breaking one that I just saw on my Twitter feed. Hedgerows says, it happened one night, 23rd of February, 1934. Boom.
People are really using the Google machine to their advantage here.
That is a wonderful movie. And
Hedgerows got that in about 3 seconds before you said it. I was
pretty much
under the wire.
Patches, what's your choice?
Probably not one that is universally loved, but a film that I have a special place in my heart for, and that would be at Miguel Ian Raya says Euro Trip, because Scotty doesn't know. You know, Scotty doesn't know.
You really love Euro Trip.
That movie is so bizarre. I don't understand. Yeah, I guess it came in the wake of Road Trip, which is not a good movie in my opinion, and then Euro Trip. With like a lesser cast and unknown directors, with a cameo by Matt Damon. I don't know. Good movie.
It sort of was the genesis of Matt Damon's like I'll do anything right. to make people laugh.
I think the story behind his cameo is I was around and I knew the director.
Much.
And so he shaved his head and did the rock scene.
If you've seen Matt Damon cameo on that horrible Showtime show House of Lies, where he. It gets like really drugged up and demands a blowjob from Don Cheadle. You will know that.
I did not know that cameo would happen.
He will do anything. I am going to go with Matt Singer, who says, "I didn't see it yet, but Snitch." Seems fair.
Are you competing with Matt Singer for his love for The Rock? Because Matt Singer really loves The Rock.
Matt Singer would easily beat me out for his love of any burly action star.
It's not a bad movie.
Yeah. It's not a bad movie, and I think The Rock is the most handsome man ever.
He's a
ever.
Pretty,
really, he's not too. His shoulders aren't too wide for you.
No, I'm a pretty tall person, so nobody's ever been able to pick me up in my entire life,
except for The Rock.
Except for The Rock, hypothetically. In my dreams.
Or like, did you see Hugh Jackman pick up both his wife and Kristen Chenoweth on the red carpet at the Oscars, like one in each arm?
At the same time?
She's like, Kristen
yes,
Chenoweth
at the same time.
Five.
Well, yeah, but his wife's like, you know, she's like, she's tall. She's a lady of,
but did you see The Rock pick up Kristen Chenoweth and Hugh Jackman and Hugh Jackman's wife at the Indy Spirit Awards?
And then free them from jail somehow.
He is the human version of Johnny Bravo. Anyway.
All right. That does it for this week's Operation Kino Review segment. We'll be back next week with both a review and the main show. In the meantime, starting with our guest, Amy Nicholson, tell the people who you are.
Hi, I'm Amy Nicholson. You can find me on Twitter at TheAmyNicholson.
Perfect.
Woohoo! And I am Matt Patches on TheMoviesEditorOfHollywood.com. Find me on Twitter at MrMisterPatches.
I'm David Ehrlich. I'm the senior editor of Film.com. You can find me on Twitter at David Ehrlich and at FilmDotCom. So Film.com.
And I am Katie Rich. You can find me here at Cinema Blend or on Twitter at Katie Rich, KateyRach. And we'll be back talking to you next week.
Forever.
Fiona says she's out shopping. She's under me, and I'm not stopping. Scotty doesn't know. So don't tell Scotty, cause Scotty doesn't know. Scotty doesn't know. Scotty doesn't know. So don't tell Scotty what on a show.